Good morning. If any of you cannot hear me, would you please raise your hand? Good. Hey, y'all know how many blind people it takes to change a light bulb? Now, what do we need light bulbs for? Come on. Well, actually, normally when I give a talk like this, I do it for lay people, and I fill it with a whole bunch of humor, and I'm going to use some humor. It's just part of the way I talk, but I'm going to have to be a little bit more serious this morning because there are some real issues with the disabled in the church that are not being addressed, and you are our leaders. You're the pastors, the conference presidents, and you need to know what's gone right and what's gone wrong, because as Jesus said, whatever you do to the least of these, you do to him. And if the church is not accessible to the disabled, then it is not accessible to Jesus. And Jesus stays out in the parking lot with all the disabled people that can't enter. All right? I believe that in the Bible. All right? The reality is many disabled people give up on the church altogether. And they stop. Some because they can't, because there's no transportation, buildings aren't accessible. Others because they feel so alienated that they just don't feel comfortable. And so this is something that needs to be done. What I'm going to do, I'm going to share my story. Now, a lot of you have heard my story and my testimony, and the handout that's going around on the share handout, a lot of you heard me preach it. This is going to be a different talk because of that, although there are going to be a few things in common. But I'm mainly going to focus on my story with the church. I want to make it clear right away. It's not that I'm bitter or angry, though I have had some feelings, and part of me, I have been called to be a pastor, and I am not serving as such. And there is a bit of a broken heart there. I'm just going to be honest. So if there is a little bit of something coming out, I'm just going to level with you that I do have, there is a bit of a broken heart inside me because I have felt called to do this, and it's not happening. So that being said, I think you'll understand. I'm going to try, though, to lace it with enough humor and, you know, try to get things through it. But I want you to understand, from birth until now, what goes on, I'm going to mention both good and bad. I'm going to try to be balanced. And there are some really good things, and I'm going to emphasize them. The seminary here has been responsible for a lot of the good things, actually. I was born in Halifax, Nova Scotia in 1975, in February 2. I am a U.S. citizen, though. Two of my parents were U.S. citizens, so I'm Canadian-American, technically. And right away, the doctors knew that there was something unusual about my eyes. Took some rather long and painful tests. They figured out that my left eye would be totally blind and my right eye would have limited vision. When I was 5 years old, we were in Loma Linda, California, you know, Adventville. They talk about the new Loma Linda coming down from heaven. And it's Loma Linda where the summer months are June, July, and smogest. Yeah, and I can tell some of you have been there, you know, and those of you that have been there and survived and then come up here. Well, they found out that my left eye was big, ugly, painful, and didn't see anything except glare coming in from the outside. And what does the Bible say? If your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. So we did that. Went to the doctor and went to surgery one of these old, cold, hungry mornings where you can't eat or drink because you're going to be under anesthesia. It's early. And you have to wait around 3 or 4 hours for the surgery to happen. The surgery was a success. But often the life, though, of someone who has a disability is a life of hospital stays and surgeries and all those kinds of things. And that's part of our culture, something to be aware of as a pastor. After that, I was fitted with a plastic prosthesis, which was rather painful because they shove all these possible prostheses in your eye. If it doesn't fit, it hurts, and you cry. And they try another one, that hurts. You cry, try another one, that, you know. Finally found one that fit. Today they just squirt some jelly into your eye and it forms a mold, and then they make a cast out of it, and then it's custom made. It works a lot better. They began teaching me Braille so I could learn to read with my fingers, which was helpful. My right eye had limited vision. I could see faces, and I couldn't recognize a face. I could play video games of the day. Bright lights were painful to me, though. But I remember, though, because I couldn't see very well, I had a hard time in church. The Sabbath school teacher put this book in my lap. I was a guest at another church, and I'm like, what's this? And she says, it's a song book. I'm like, well, that's nice. I'm not able to see well. I'm not going to be able to read it. She's like, well, just try to read it. I'm like, well, yeah, but I'm not able to read it. I'm not going to be able to. Well, just try. I wonder if she was the one who invented the term visually challenged. Like, I'm blind because I don't try hard enough to see. I remind you today, both my eyes are prosthetic. They're $1,500 a pop and they don't even work. But I guess if I try, they would. It's funny now. It wasn't as funny then. It's one of my most memorable, unmemorable experiences of my childhood. And it's just because it was just so irritating. I finally shoved it under a chair, and the teacher finally left me alone. But you want to be careful with kids. If a kid says they're not able to do something like that, it's not worth having a fight over, especially if they're a guest. You're not going to accomplish a thing. It's not worth it. That's why we need to listen to each other and pay attention. I also remember a time when I was in school. We always talk about bullying in school. Yeah, I got bullied in school. I got shoved to the ground, and people throw sand in my mouth, call me bad names, all kinds of bad stuff. It goes on in church as well. Maybe not as bad, but it goes on. Remember, I was sitting in Sabbath school, so I was sitting in the back row, because I wanted to be up high on the top of the, you know, they had these seats on different levels of chairs and stuff. And the kid next to me kept saying I was retarded, like my name tag said retarded on all this stuff. And today, I'd probably just laugh him off the stage, but, you know, back then I was 7 or 8, it kind of hurt. And the thing I really didn't like, because I explained it to my parents, they're just like, for the angle of, well, you know, you shouldn't have sat on the back row, the teacher couldn't see and all this stuff. You know, I don't understand this blame the victim attitude that we have around here. It never made any sense to me. Something goes wrong, we blame the victim. Okay, I might have been able to be more shrewd, but that's not my fault. I mean, the person's fault. They shouldn't have been calling me names. You know? That's kind of like saying, because you didn't take self-defense, it's your fault you were shot. Okay, I get it. Blame the victim, sure, yeah. I had to go to the doctor a lot to have my eyes examined, and one of those examinations, which had to be under anesthesia because, of course, bright lights were painful, one of them showed a cataract in my right eye. Taken to surgery when I was 8, knew there's a 50% chance that my eye would collapse. It didn't. God provided. I had a few more years of sight. But that's the life I live. And you live this life where you wake up and know that today I could go blind. That's your life. What do you think? Reality is, today any of you could go blind. It can happen. Get over it. You will survive. It is a reality. Our mortality is a factor on Earth. We're on a fallen planet. Things do go wrong. But especially when there was a 50% chance, and yes, I knew what that meant. My parents taught me math. I understood. When I was 9, my parents divorced, and actually, that was more painful than everything with my eyes, just to tell you flat out. When I was 12, I was living with my dad, and there was one morning when I had this machine. It blew my scorecard really big and magnified it so that I could see it on a TV screen, and I couldn't get it to focus right. And the other kids said they could see it just fine. I was in sixth grade, 12 years old. Well, I went home, and my computer screen was blurry. A few days later, I went to the doctor, and the doctor said that my eye was dying, and that was going to be it. I was going to go blind. So that was the day. Now, I want to tell you something about grace. God gives you grace to get through every trial. And there's something to know as a pastor. You want to tell someone that's going through something like this? You want to look for grace. There are 3 graces God gave. I lost my vision at the end of the school year, so the teachers could just waive all my schoolwork. You know, it's only 2 weeks left of school. Just forget it, right? Figure it out next year. 3 months earlier, I had a sudden urge to relearn Braille. I'd let it go because kids bored of that type of stuff. But I relearned it. I was just ready. I'd also found a Bible on cassette tape my dad gave me. I was listening to the radio, Christian radio, and I was really falling in love with God. A few months later, I was baptized on December 12, 1987. And that church really accepted me. Yeah, Bible quizzes, I was memorizing the Bible stories really well, and I was able to do well in the Bible quizzes, and everybody wanted me on their team. It was kind of fun, actually. It felt good to be useful once in a while. And then, especially when I knew it was coming later, then I would have even been more grateful. But I'm not bragging because of what I'm going to be telling you soon. I think this was a consolation. God said, let's give this guy a little bit of fun. I was 8th grade, went to live with my mom, and there I had to deal with Christian Adventist education. Now, I believe in education. That's why I criticize it. If I didn't, I would just say forget it. I believe in it. But we need to watch our kids. I believe bullying is a sin. And people will burn in hell over it, although it won't be forever because we believe in annihilation. I guess it's okay then. Sometimes I wonder when we preach annihilation. I was like, it's okay. Hey, you know, you're not going to burn forever at least. Anyway, I do believe in annihilation, but it's just, that's one of the implications of it. I had problems with kids hiding my pants at PE, so I couldn't find them after dressing down. And you know, my Bible says that cursed is the one who causes the blind to stray out of the path. Deuteronomy 27:18, look it up. Deuteronomy 27:18. All right? One time there was a lady, she said that she had a crush on me. I was all excited, fell for it. The next morning she told me before the whole class it was a joke. You want empirical proof that high school taught me a lot not to trust? I will give you empirical proof. This is about as empirical as it gets. Eighth grade, trust fall. Had no problem falling backwards, letting my classmates catch me. 12th grade, I'd gone bungee jumping 6 months earlier, so I was used to being airborne. Same group of kids, I just couldn't do it. I got sick to my stomach and couldn't do it. I learned not to trust. Is that a good lesson to learn? I think we should learn to guard our trust, but to learn not to trust is a very bad thing. In church, well, some good, some bad. The bad first, youth Sabbath school. Activity, the whole period, Pictionary. Someone draws a picture, you try to guess what it is. Great. That's fun. You know, I have learned, actually, the kids really don't want to do stuff like that. They'd rather talk about drugs and sex and other problems that you have to really deal with in the real world, not guessing games. But anyway. I'm really serious. Kids want to go deep. They want to talk about their problems. They want to talk about the world, real things. Abortion. That our youth want to talk about these things. If you talk about them, you'll edify them and get them thinking, and you'll really be making a difference. Plus, it's more accessible to the disabled. One time they had me lead Sabbath school. Nobody prepared me for it at all. It was on Romans 1, so I gave a bunch of texts out on Romans 1 to the kids, and nobody could understand anything. And I asked someone about something. They said, oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. I went to the teacher afterward, and I said, I am never doing this again. Yeah, Ray gave up. Yeah, I never do now. I've learned that. But, well, a couple years later, the teachers... This is one of the few times I've ever been really treated redemptively, and I really feel, especially outside of school. They worked it out so that I would assist in leading a Sabbath school in music, and I would provide a bunch of different types of music to listen to, and we would see what we thought was appropriate for Sabbath or not. And I supplied a bunch of music. Unfortunately, half of it was all my favorite songs, so people were criticizing those, but I was okay with that because I knew what I was getting into. It was a good discussion, and they said I did well, and it was received a lot better. But see, that's an example of being redemptive. Something doesn't work, you don't just give up. You say, well, how can we work with this? How can we help this person? I even got to preach my first sermon when I was 17. I had a wonderful experience praying and talking to God like a friend, and I wanted to share it with the world. So I preached, and the pastor let me do it, and let me write the whole sermon. He guided me through it. It was received well. Though there was one person in the church that said that being blind, I probably wouldn't have much of a chance in theology. I should consider something else. But I tell you what, though, I thank the guy for his honesty, because I never really made it in pastoral ministry anyway, so I guess he was right. But anyway, I'm going to go into that later. But I did feel a sense of calling, a sense that there is a place for me in ministry, and things were looking the right direction. Everybody was telling me I should be a pastor. Went to college with a theology degree. Students dictated my Greek and Hebrew to me. I got software to help with it. And it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed the classes. Even went call portering between my sophomore and junior year. I was dating a girl, and the two of us, this was before I met Sally, but the two of us, this lady and I, went out door-to-door call portering, and they worked us in, and we split the scholarship. And it was fun. I even had one experience where I sold $150 worth of MAGA books to a gentleman who was impressed because I was blind. So, I mean, God works. And it was very powerful. And these were some of the confirmations of calling. My junior year, we did the extern program. You know, that's where you do the thing where, you know, you're working at a local church. They had me working at PUC. That's where I was based. They had me working there. The only problem with that is it's a great method of accommodation, but college churches are not like regular churches, are they? Everything's different. So I did a couple dorm worships. I never actually preached. I just did a dorm worship or two. Designed a couple of inventive ideas, ran a couple of programs, things like that. Although I wonder if it really prepared me for anything that I would actually do in the real world of ministry, because colleges are different. I wonder if they had challenged me with the local church, if I would have figured out how to get transportation and would have managed. I think I would have, and I think it would have been fine. And we need to be careful. Sometimes we can over-coddle somebody and end up not preparing them for something, and we need to think about, this may be a combination, but it may not be helpful. And if I had a problem with it, I would have complained right away. I thought it was a great idea myself, so I mean, I'm not complaining about them. I didn't think of the problem either, so it's not their fault. It's just simply unexplored territory, and that happens. Graduated college, and of course I didn't get a call right away. Everyone said there's a lot of wonderful things this kid can do, but we don't know what they are. Went to seminary, got an MDiv. Teachers here accommodated me very well. Dr. Davidson gave me my Hebrew qualifying exam in my dorm room because that's where my computer equipment, which back then was not portable, he gave me my exam in my dorm room. And this is the type of good things that the seminary did, actually. Got my MDiv, interviewed with everybody, and everyone was like, you got a lot of great talents, which is another way of saying, we don't want you. You know that. Especially if you're female. I have nothing against females in ministry. I'm simply poking fun at the system. All right? Any of you are female, you've heard that. I'm sure you've heard that line many times before. About the same line is, yeah, you're really good looking, but I don't want to go out with you. Same type of thing, I guess. Graduated, I went to Loma Linda to try chaplaincy. That bombed out real fast. Went back here to do a PhD. Now, at least the people warned me that very few people get jobs with PhDs, so I don't fault the department for that one because they told me, so I know what I'm getting. I know what I'm into now. That's fine. People were very, very accommodating here. And one of the teachers, Bob Bates with Acadian, he actually wrote his own textbook, so I just used the electronic version. And he rigged up the final exam with extra Hammurabi laws since I wasn't able to read the cuneiform. It worked really well. It was a lot of fun. They even let me teach. I taught a bunch of classes here a few years ago about everything that an Old Testament student would be able to teach. Even did a little bit in undergrad. It was really fun. So I've definitely been given the opportunities here to start an empire, basically. An academic empire. That's what, tell me what it's like. You got to build this. Get it stronger and stronger and stronger. And that you know, eventually you get a job is the idea. But where I found most of my problems was with trying to get conferences to take me seriously. I remember one interview, and I will not mention any names, and if any of you think you know, please do the kindness of not guessing, because I will be ambiguous myself. I don't want to dishonor anybody. I will show respect, even if I don't feel other people do. And I'm being honest, okay? These were actually quite painful. One of them, this guy wouldn't get off the fact that I was a Salvation Army bell ringer for a couple of cruises. He's like, what are you doing working with the Salvation Army? You know, I like to see him stand out there 10 hours a day in some freezing weather ringing a bell out in front of a store. And then he can complain about what I did. That is hard work. You go out there and try it. I bet some of you couldn't even do it. But the reason I did it is it was the only way I could make money to get gifts for Christmas, and I wanted to make a difference. I felt like a street chaplain. It was a lot of fun. Someone else, he just sat there silent. He wouldn't even ask me any questions. He was just sitting there like,
this guy's blind. What do I do? Do you like ministry? You see, you believe in God, right?
I mean, that's what I felt like. So I just started volunteering. Well, you know, I do this ministry. I've helped guide people away from suicide on the internet. I've done all this. I've led people to Christ, all this stuff. And he just sat there and finally we prayed and that was it. And Sally and I both knew that that guy, right from the beginning, was like, who's this kid think he is? He's blind. What do you think he's doing trying to get a job in ministry? And that's the feeling that we got out of it. I even had one person finally admit they didn't know what a blind person could do in ministry. Well, you know what? I thanked him. I said, thank you for your honesty. Now, here's what I want you to do for me, please. List for me in email the things that you don't think a blind person would be able to do well in ministry, and I will tell you how I have already done them correctly, or I will have one of my mentors tell me what to say. And my mentor, I have a mentor who's blind, Bob Wilson, okay? And I would simply call him and say, Dr. Wilson, how would you handle this? And then he would tell me, and I'd say, oh, well, my mentor told me that this would work. I sent 3 follow-up emails and had never, even today, I've never heard a word back taking my challenge. Which, I'm sorry, but the P word, prejudice, does have to come into my mind when something like that happens. I was willing to engage him, say, look, I understand you don't think I can do anything. Fine. Then let's sit down and talk like gentlemen and work this out. This is the world that I come out of. What am I doing now? I have a PhD. I do a few classes for Griggs. They figured out that I can operate a computer, so I should be able to teach online. I am going around for Christian Record Services for the Blind, leaving coin boxes at businesses and asking people to give money to help the blind go to summer camp. I guess it takes a PhD to do that. But I'm doing it because it's whatever your hand finds you, do with all your might. And with the rest of my time, I am attending massage therapy school to learn a blind trade, which, by the way, I'm finding very fulfilling, and I'm almost wondering if I'm going to find it more fulfilling than being a pastor. Who knows? I don't know. I'm really enjoying it. I can make a difference for people, help people with different struggles physically and emotionally, and just help someone chill out. And really today, how many times does someone just spend 50 minutes with somebody one-on-one, undivided attention? I get to do that. You know, so I'm really beginning to realize that there's a lot of power in this ministry. And maybe sometime later, you know, I can do something more academic. I can still be a freelance writer, and it looks like there's some people going to publish some articles of mine. But, I mean, I've had to really let go of this pastoral ministry. And the interesting thing is, I was talking to my mother, and my mother, of course, went through a divorce. We talked about that earlier. And when I was talking about my career plans falling apart, she told me the most interesting thing, that is like what she went through when my father left her. I was thinking, you know what? You are right. That is an interesting way of looking at it. I mean, I never thought about that, but that's true. Same type of reorganization, figuring out who you are, what you're doing, so on and so forth. So I just have a few little tips. I want to take some questions, but I have a few little tips on that sheet there on the SHARE acronym. I want to go through these a little bit briefly because I want to spend some time with some questions. Looks like I can spend about 15 minutes on these. So I'm going to go with now. This I do use a little more humor on because we need to learn to laugh at ourselves. And these are some things that you can do it right. And again, I mean, I know I may sound like I'm upset and hurt and a little bit bitter, but if I was really bitter, I would have left the church, okay? The fact that I'm here speaking to y'all means there's something in me that's still wanting to stay with the system. All right, so that speaks for itself. If I was really antagonistic, I wouldn't be here. I would just be out on the street speaking against Seventh-day Adventists, how they're all a cult and all that junk, okay? But I'm not. I'm in the system, and I'm saying, look, stay with the system. We have been given special truths for the end of time. We also know that Jesus ain't coming back until we perfectly reflect his character. And by the looks of things, it's going to be a while. Okay? You're going to be conference presidents. Please don't make the same mistakes you've done with me. Okay? Please remember that a blind person is a human being as well. And if a blind person is in your office interviewing for a job, take them seriously as you would anybody else. Give them an opportunity to test themselves. One person, they even said, well, get someone to mentor you. Easier said than done. I'm still trying to do that officially. I have someone long distance, but you know, it's hard to find someone with that kind of time on their hands. But you know, God is providing for me, and maybe in a few years something else will happen. Meanwhile, I will be training and become a professional massage therapist and provide healing the way blind people have done since time immemorial. And I will find joy in it. I already am as a student. Okay, share. Slow down here, adapt, relate, and empower. Briefly, the S is for slowing down. These are all, by the way, from the story of Bartimaeus, Jesus helping Bartimaeus. Jesus slowed down to help Bartimaeus, and so we should help the blind and the disabled. You go to something like potluck, or some call pot faith. Try to rush Sally through line. You know, she has to get food for me as well, sometimes her disabled mother. And, you know, she used to work as a waitress. Surely, if anyone can move food around quickly, it would be my wife. Ever heard the saying, light a candle, don't curse the darkness? Well, I'll tell you what, it applies here. If you really think we're moving too slow, offer to help. The H is for hearing, listening. Jesus listened to Bartimaeus. He had Bartimaeus follow his voice. The disabled often live in a world where people make decisions for us. And Jesus asked Bartimaeus, what do you want me to do for you? He gave Bartimaeus the dignity to make a decision. Jesus knew what he wanted. He knew that what Bartimaeus needed was a dignity to make a decision for himself. One time in college, I was returning from church, and I was just, I think it was like standing, I was walking, something like that, near the street corner. Suddenly, this elderly guy throws his arms around me. Now, this is PUC, just an hour north of San Francisco, bear in mind. Like, oh, what are you doing? I'm helping you cross the street. But I'm not going across the street. Really happened. What you do is you say, excuse me, sir or ma'am, may I help you? Find at church. You don't just grab someone and throw them in a Sabbath school room or something like that. You find out what they need, what their gifts are. Jesus asked Bartimaeus, not the people standing with him. People often ask someone with me, does he need a wheelchair? No, it's my eyes that don't work. My legs are fine. I'll get up and run over you if you need me to prove that. So we like to act it out in a restaurant, you know, or it could be a potluck eve, you know. It's like, what does he want for dinner? So I would say, what do you want for dinner? I say, I want spaghetti. He wants spaghetti. What would he like on the spaghetti? Honey, what would you like on the spaghetti? I like marinara sauce. I like marinara sauce. What would he like to drink? This English to English translation will get old real fast. I wasn't actually going to spend a lot of time on these, but I see we have good chemistry, so I'll have a little fun with y'all then. When speaking to a deaf interpreter, speak to the person who is deaf, not to the interpreter. If you say, what does she want, the deaf interpreter will sign what does she want and whatever that's supposed to look like, and the deaf person will say, I don't know what she wants, but I know what I want. And we already went over the situation in Sabbath school. You need to listen to people. When I was in high school, I had to have extra time on my chemistry tests, and because Braille reads slow, and so the teacher gave it to me when I explained it. I was at camp meeting in high school for youth, and some activities I could do, some I couldn't do, but the leaders basically just said, sit out when you want to sit out, join in when you want to join in, and we won't argue with you. And so I sat out some of the time. Other times, like, you know what, I think I can do this. And they're like, yeah, we think you can too, go ahead. And they just went along with me. I had no problem sitting out some of the time. I just don't like when I have to sit out all the time. We understand they're going to play softball and have to sit out. That's fine, but if a blind person has to sit out on everything, that's a problem. We need to listen, though, and let them participate as much as they can. The A is for adapt. Slow down here, adapt. Adapting sometimes requires a little bit of creativity. One example of when adapting does not work is Braille on drive-through ATMs. Now, I'm not exactly certain what they were drinking when they thought of this idea. Something must have been in that Roma they had that morning. I think the problem was they weren't drinking Roma, but anyway. How would I drive there? I guess I'd like wave my white cane out the window and honk the horn real loud and maybe have a seeing eye dog grab the wheel and, you know, woof woof, get out of the way. So I get there to the ATM, and I'm punching a bunch of buttons. Now, see, the thing that people don't understand is that the Braille tells you what the buttons are, but nothing to tell you what's on the screen. So I'm typing, and suddenly this big truck arrives, and these two hooded gentlemen throw me in the back of the truck, CIA agents, and they're like, what are you doing? We're Homeland Security, and we're taking you to Syria to be or someplace to be tortured because you've just sold $500,000 of assets from Andrews University to Al-Qaeda. Okay, recognized, I'm sure it wouldn't be that way, but I think you get the point. No way I know what's going on. I offered to test some Bible software for somebody, and I got it installed just fine after Sally and I fussed with the manual forever and ever trying to figure it out. What's the first thing to pop on the screen after installation? The user's guide. And what's the first thing in the user's guide? Installation instructions, which my screen reader would read just fine. So I explained to them, next year, could you please email me the installation instructions? They did, and when I did it the second time, it worked perfect. Some rules to help out with. One is to remember that it's the thought that counts, doesn't cut it when someone gets hurt. So we need to pay attention, be creative, learn to laugh, but still be, you know, think. Leading a blind person, let them take your arm and they walk a step behind you. You need to remember that you have suddenly become twice as wide and that telephone pole is not going to move out of the person's way. I know. I can tell you that by experience. They do not. Now, they should. Telephone poles should move out of my way. I'm Ray. I've been to seminary here. They should move out of my way, but they don't. Anyway, okay. Just kidding. All right. When leading a blind person sitting in a chair, place your hand on the back of the chair. The rest follows logically. When you are done speaking with the blind person, let them know when you are leaving the room. Otherwise, they're going to be talking to the wall. And last I checked, it's rude to do that to anybody. Walk out on someone while you're talking to them. And people complain about my social skills. You know, it's like, let's be fair. I've actually found it very difficult in social situations because people don't understand doing things differently. I don't see when it's my turn to speak always. And people end up getting upset. I end up losing friends. Found out 6 months later what went wrong. And I've been punished, ridiculed, and scorned, all kinds of stuff from people that should have just told me the problem and we could have fixed it. Matthew 18 gives you firm guidelines for what to do. You go to the person, talk to them in private. That doesn't work, bring a couple of friends. That doesn't work, bring the pastor. That doesn't work, then do whatever you have to do. But there's a due process that is almost never followed. And that's why people like me have a very hard time bonding. Because like, well, yeah, if this will be fine, then what mistake am I going to make that will end everything? You know, have you ever had somebody, I mean, I do this to people. I'll take a volunteer and I'll go, name four recent U.S. presidents. Come on, think, come on. Why? What's your problem? Why can't you come up with them? Well, of course, you can't because I'm pushing you too hard. That is what the disabled live under almost all the time. Because people castigate us and criticize us and punish and ridicule and everything and shun because when you make an innocent mistake, we didn't understand what we were doing. Any of you here who's from a foreign country knows exactly what I'm talking about. All right? Yeah, I know, you know. You all know. We all know, okay? We all have been aliens somewhere in our lives. If you haven't, find a place where you are. You need it. You need the experience. I even had experience in a church where they weren't letting me preach anymore, and I finally pumped it out of somebody. You know I'm a good interrogator. I finally pumped the truth out of someone that apparently I'd said some things that offended people. I'm like, you know, first of all, when is that wrong? But second of all, if you had told me a long time ago, I could have fixed it. And they were still reluctant to have me preach again, but God effectively forced them to. I'm not going to tell you who this is, and if anyone thinks you know, please don't say so. And someone ended up getting sick sometime later, and they were without a preacher, and it was during time of year when no one was available, and I emailed them, look, I'm willing. They're like, yeah, I guess we're going to have to take you. And I did well, and they've had me preach at least, you know, every now and then, sometimes, once in a while, maybe less often now that I'm busier, but once in a while, I'll go there and do stuff. And I appreciate a lot of churches, so that doesn't tell you anything about where it is. I guess speak all over the place, so you don't have any idea where this happened. Other things are don't point or refer to things by their color. Someone's blind. Don't pet a seeing eye dog on harness. It's the dog's either working, and if you do that, someone to throw a frisbee, the dog will lead the blind person over the fence to catch the frisbee. Someone is deaf, use the deaf interpreter, went over that, use good lighting, those types of things. Clear lip movement if they read lips, otherwise texting and email. Don't lean on a wheelchair, get your own. Wheelchair is thought of as part of somebody's body, and as you wouldn't want someone leaning on your body, don't lean on their wheelchair. Okay, so down here, adapt. The R is to relate. Start a conversation with someone who is blind. Jesus, he adapted to Bartimaeus by having him follow his voice. He related to Bartimaeus by starting a relationship with him. And chat, talk, say hi. Ask about an obvious disability. In America, we're used to that. It's obvious. Get over it. And they're not using visual things, you know, like, I see what you're saying, it's perfectly fine. Use humor. Learn to laugh. The funniest thing that ever happened to me, I was being seated on an airplane and a flight attendant said, "This is Ray, he'll be sitting with you on this flight, and he's blind today." Today? I'm blind every day! All right, slow down here, adapt, relate. The E is for empower. Empowerment is going beyond simply adapting. It's actually helping someone become as if they weren't disabled at all. Jesus did that by healing Bartimaeus. I will illustrate that with the empowered flower. This is a disabled daisy. See, it's there. This is origami. I do this as a hobby. Someone taught me this. One example of empowerment is teaching me origami, by the way. And I figured out how to make a daisy after a while. And see, it's just this flower on the stem, but how long would it live? I mean, there's no connection to roots. I could set it on the podium here, but what, you know, it's just going to lay there. But it needs some empowerment, doesn't it? Let's put it in a vase. Here's a paper vase. All right? Now it'll be empowered. Some things that hinder empowerment are saying you can't do something. I can't, it's a four-letter word. We shouldn't use it at all anyway, but I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Don't use a disability as a handle. Don't say the blind guy's here. Someone did that. I mean, and I'm like, this is the blind guy. You know, my name's Ray. This is the blind guy. I mean, you wouldn't say the black lady's here, would you? You know that, right? That's wrong. You don't. Okay. We know that. So don't say the blind guy's here. The only exception I'll make is at the massage therapy school, if it's clinical and someone remembers that a blind person gave him a massage and they want me to work on him again, if they can't remember and look, this is a blind guy that was working on me, I guess that's okay because it's going to give me a client, so I guess they won't complain. But, but I mean, generally, I'd still prefer to know me by name, but if they have to say, oh, there was a blind man that gave me a massage last week, I won't complain. All right, there's the empowered flower. If someone would like a flower afterward, I'll give it to you. See, it stands up. Put it back in my pocket now. Okay, also the one is bullying, which we already went into, went over that subject. The things you can do to empower someone, to teach someone a new skill. Like someone taught me origami, and I can make flowers for everybody, and it's a lot of fun. Helping someone get education and things. I mean, I gave a talk at a fire department, and they had them give me a tour of a fire truck. It took them half an hour to show me the whole thing. I was amazed. I'd been there during Fire Prevention Week, but I couldn't see what they were showing. It was so cool. They let me climb up to the top of the fire truck and feel all the apparatus and everything. It was so exciting. It was just really neat. I felt like a little kid. And we just did that like 6 months ago. I believe that every pastor, pastors, listen to this. Okay, I believe every pastor, that's you, and all of you, all right, should visit every church member that is disabled and find out what their gifts are. I know we're big on lay leadership. You can train a lady to do it fine, but I wouldn't trust him with it. Do this one yourself. The reason is, unless you've trained them before, you need to know what you're training them to do, first of all. Most people haven't done this. And you need to make sure that it's done right, and then you can train your lady to do it, and then they can do it. But you may want to do this first the first time to make sure you know how it's going to go. Find out what their gifts are. You may have a blind person that writes poetry. Have them recite a poem that relates to a sermon. Maybe have someone with ADD be a greeter. Think about it. ADHD? Have a bulletin. Oh, have a bulletin. Oh, good morning. Have a hug. Have a bulletin. Oh, here's a bulletin for you. The last thing you want is someone who is so focused that 50 people will walk by and they won't notice it. You want someone with ADD to greet, don't you? Think about it. They'd be your best, and then they're doing something. They'd feel useful. I'm not joking, actually. I think it would be great. Yeah, I'll take questions. I want to recite a poem just before we end. So I want to take questions now. This is actually the best time to take questions. But then I do want to about 60 seconds at the end to recite a poem that I wrote.
Okay. Just raise your hand and I'll bring the microphone. Question?
Or you could give an answer and I could give a question. I'll do on Jeopardy, whatever you want to do. I try to believe in open opportunities.
Good morning. You mentioned briefly that you led someone to Christ. Could you share just briefly what that experience was like?
Well, I've actually led several people to Christ. Which one do you want? We serve a big God, right? The first one, I was call quartering, and I was a high school freshman girl, and couldn't buy any books, so I finally said, do you have a relationship with Jesus? And she's like, I go to church. I'm like, well, that's fine, but do you love Jesus? Are you friends with him? We started talking to him like a friend, falling in love with him, being friends with him, and I said, you want to pray with me? So I had to repeat the sinner's prayer after me, and we gave her steps to Christ, and it was just really touching and everything, and one of those really warm, fuzzy experiences that made me know that I'm supposed to do something in ministry. That's one. There are many others. Because we serve a big God. Not because I'm a big person. We serve a really, really, really big God. I don't know if you've noticed.
Anyone?
Next question.
How do you feel? I know you mentioned briefly that you were a little discouraged about not going into ministry, but what are you doing now to keep yourself? I know you're doing the massage thing, but ministry-wise, how do you basically feel about the whole issue of not being in ministry?
Well, as I told you, it felt like my mom when my dad left her. All right, I'll just leave it at that. I am doing what I can. I preach on them. For Christian Record, I do go around preaching. I'm writing some articles. But I really do feel like this was my calling. And, God told me to do this. And, this is where things are. I'm doing the best I can. But I do feel, I am finding fulfillment in doing massage. Right now I'm still only a student, but I'm still finding it very fulfilling. Although it's amazing how many friends will come over when they find out that you're studying massage. Which is fine, actually. It gives you people to practice on. But it is, it's not, I didn't think that I'd be doing this. I've always kind of, it's a blind trade. I can do something bigger than that. But I'm finding I really enjoy it.
We have another question.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any opportunities to do the disability awareness overseas?
Well, I go to churches, and by the way, if any of you are in churches that I haven't spoken at, even if I have, part of my job for Christian Record is to go around speaking in churches, Lions Clubs, Rotary Clubs, schools. If any of you have kids in a school, you might want to talk to them. Some schools I've spoken to already, but I'd like to do more. I do both public and private. I can do a public school. I just have to de-religiousize the talk, but I can do it. That's fine. Anything I've done, I can do a youth group, but there's a church that's wanting me to do a youth group sometime, and to talk about bullying and things like that.
You said that you were interested because you felt that you had a call.
Mm-hmm.
When you, because I'm actually making an assumption here, when you expressed that you had a call to the people that were interviewing you, how did they deal with that?
Oh, yeah.
How did they address that?
Okay, someone has a place for you. Just dump it on someone. Or the other one is, we'll pray for you. Don't you get tired of that? Platitudes, Yeah, it's like a little child starving in Africa. Oh, yeah, we'll pray for you to get some food. Jesus is your food. Yeah. People say, yeah, they clearly said, believe that I have a call, which is not someone they're going to. The thing is the difficulty is getting someone willing to actually invest money in you. That's what's hard. All right?
Dr. McAllister, more of a comment than a question.
Mm-hmm.
You said that you felt that God called you.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be discouraged. Just because you weren't hired does not mean that you're not called, and pastoral ministry could still be in your future. You're still young, and don't give up on that call, because God called you, so don't give up on it.
I agree. Moses didn't start until he was 80, so I totally understand. and it may be that doing massage therapy will teach me some submission and humility and service, which are good skills to know. And I'll be a better pastor or professor when that time comes. And I'm fully aware of that. But there's still a sense of, I feel like I got led along, you know, someone's leading me on, basically. You know, you're having a dating relationship, someone leads you on, and you find they don't like you, or they're just kind of, you know. In some ways, that's how I felt a lot of times. And I'm just being honest. But again, remember, I haven't left the church, so apparently, I mean, I'm able to deal with it. Okay.
You had mentioned when you were younger, as a youth, not being able to participate in some of the activities, but you look forward to participating in other activities. You said you couldn't do softball, but mm-hmm. there were some that you wanted to do. What sorts of activities did you enjoy doing? What would be good activities to be able to do with our youth if they have these sorts of disabilities?
Well, actually, it depends on the disability, and you need to figure out, you know, what the person's disability is, what they know how to do. I mean, I learned how to ice skate when I was in high school. You know, a lot of stuff that you can do. There's different types of games. Some you can do, some you can't. You have to sit down with the person and figure out. Sometimes a disabled child will have activities that they can do that they can bring and draw other people into.
Speaking about church facilities, what is probably the one thing that you wish that churches, you know, the actual facilities would have better to accommodate?
The thing people forget about the most is having a ramp to the platform. Someone in a wheelchair doesn't just want to get into the building and get taken care of. They may want to actually lead out in worship.
We installed a ramp in Campus Hill Church, and we had people go up and do
Amen.
Worship and everything. One more, last question.
Okay, and then I have an announcement and a poem, basically.
Last question's a girl mm-hmm. question. Where did you and your wife meet?
In the seminary.
Yay!
And we were married in Berman Auditorium. We had a Jewish Adventist wedding. When that synagogue was underway, they did our wedding for us. That Dukan and them, they did our wedding for us. It was really cool. Okay, a couple announcements. For one is that I have been working for the last year on setting up Greek and Hebrew materials for the blind. I've got everything, Hebrew Bibles, Greek New Testaments, all kinds of stuff. If anyone hears about a blind person wanting to come to seminary, send them to me. I will give them probably about 40,000 pages of material that I've prepared. Other thing is, I work for Christian Record. One way to empower people is to give to the blind and to give to organizations that help the blind. We have response envelopes you can give out at the door. I would encourage all of you to give $1 to help send a blind person to summer camp. Just $1. I know you're poor, but if all of you gave a dollar, we're talking to get $7,500. That adds up. Okay? And the thing is, it'll help. I told you how the blind are treated, right? You understand this now. This makes a difference. I went to camp. They had me teaching origami, and they had me doing downhill skiing. All right, this makes a difference. These people, these blind people, really, really need some encouragement, and this really makes a difference. So Sally's going to have these response envelopes. If you like one, take one. Otherwise, if you want to give us a dollar or so for Christian Record, it'll really help. And I know you're poor. That's why I say just $1. You give a dollar, someone else will see you give a dollar, they'll give a dollar. Someone else will give a dollar, you'll start a peer pressure wave, all right? It's really cool. Okay, do I have time to close with a poem, or do we have time for more questions? Okay, I will recite a poem that I wrote called A Prayer for Healing. I am the hand that is withered and sore, the eye that does not always see clearly. I am the foot that is bent to the side, the tongue that stammers and struggles for speech. I am the heart daily broken by sorrow and care. I am weak, but God is strong. I have a plan, a purpose, a life, a chance to fulfill the passion of my Creator. For we are one body with one blood in our veins. We have one spirit and one head, even Christ. And the Lord of love, who is no respecter of persons, grants to all the joy of his work. For not even the strong are strong by themselves. I see the church as a bride on her day of marriage, but lying in a bed of sickness, her shame and confusion about her broken members keeps her from rising in spite of them, in thanks for them, and so she wastes away, soon to become herself as weak. Heal us, O Lord, and we shall be healed. Save us, and we shall be saved. For you are our praise, our delight. And if we would learn to move in unity, we would get up, step, leap into paradise.
Thank you, Dr. McAllister. This has been really fun and yet informational. And I hope you'll come again. And we really, really appreciate this, don't we? All of the envelopes were given out, and we needed a few more. So if you could get some to me, Sally.
We can leave some at your office.
Yeah, that's okay, good. Great. Thank you very much. God bless you all.